Morning, and welcome to episode 4 of The Reticle Presents Installing to Disk. Indeed, we're back once again. I am Jordez, and with me, well, not quite with me, but he's around, as per usual is.
Nickname is James.
Yes, I'll just have to explain that last sentence. Instead of us both being in the studio, as per usual, James is halfway across the country, and we're doing this through the wonder of the internet.
I'm halfway across the world, Jordan. I'm actually in Cairo as we speak at the moment. I'm in King Tut's tomb. That's not a euphemism, by the way.
I couldn't imagine it being one. On this episode of Installing to Disk, we take a look at John Romero's new shooter in the news. In the retro roundup, James was playing Rock and Roll Racing. In the rumor room, we're looking at the PlayStation Orbis. So let's kick things off with the news. The once famed developer John Romero has announced a new shooter for PC. Details are sparse so far, but it appears Romero's new game may be an MMO FPS.
What, like, World of Warcraft?
Apart from the FPS part, yeah.
So, okay, right. Cool, I'll buy it.
I won't, because it's an MMO.
I'm not, I'm just trying to give him some encouragement.
John Romero doesn't really need any encouragement.
Well, I've never heard of him.
What, the man who created Doom, Quake and Wolfenstein? Three of the biggest FPSs ever.
Fair play to him, you know.
Yeah, and then he went to make Daikatana and he kind of messed everything up. But that's beside the point. Star Wars Kinect has become the first Kinect game ever to top the UK All Formats chart. This is despite getting terrible reviews from game critics, from Star Wars fans, from people with common sense. But
okay, this might be a bit of a strange question because it's probably not going to be true, but does George Lucas fit in the common sense category?
Cause no.
No, he doesn't, does he?
No. No, not at all. But yeah, it's got a lot of people angry because it has a section where you have to do a dance as Han Solo.
Yeah, I was kind of hoping that was a April Fool's kind of thing, but
sadly it wasn't. But in fairness, it has been quite a slow week for game releases, so on a busier week that might have tanked and we could have all lived a happy life, but oh well. And finally, EA has been voted as the worst company in America in an online poll conducted by The Consumerist. Which, while quite funny, is just terribly, terribly wrong, because I'm not a fan of EA, and some of the things they've done are terrible, but worst company in America? I don't think so. But it's an online poll for you, so it's not necessarily binding.
Like superglue.
It's not like superglue. It's not like superglue indeed. So, that is the news for you.
James's Rumour Room.
Yeah, we don't have a link from the news to the Rumour Room this week, so...
James's Rumour Room. Yeah,
Seamless.
See? That's as smooth as it gets. Right, number one. I think it was either last week or the week before we mentioned that the Wii U hasn't had a great deal of news for a while.
Well, what happens is every few podcasts we sporadically remember it exists and then just forget about it forever.
They are still releasing it, aren't they?
I don't know, to be honest. It's like every like 4 weeks I'll hear, it'll just pop back up into my mind and I'll be like, oh yeah, that thing.
So, a report has emerged claiming that it will cost at least $300 at its US launch later this year. That's a Montreal-based culture and entertainment site is citing that, and they've apparently got sources close to Nintendo who've said that, and that works out at £188, which ain't too bad really for a new console, is it?
That's a direct
which
never happens. It'll be about £300.
Yeah,
that's what we always get shafted when it comes to electronic prices.
Because that's how logic works.
Well, the same thing happened with the PlayStation 3 when it came out. I believe that was, what, 500 it possibly $600, and it cost 425 quid when it came to England. So the companies aren't afraid of putting up the price just to screw over everyone in the UK and Europe.
Well, just import one.
That's why. Well, we don't know whether it's going to be region locked yet, because all we know is that it's got a stupid name and it looks like a brick.
Anyway, Jordan, how often do you use home on the PlayStation?
As 90% of people on PlayStation 3, I've used it once, realised it was terrible, and never looked at it ever again.
See, I was quite interested with it to begin with.
Then you played it once and then realised it was terrible and never went back.
I used it a few times, but then they promised a lot for it and we never got half of it. So, like, the virtual trophy cases and
people,
loads of things in your apartment to show off what you've done. And I mean, I could go on there now and there'd still be a chest of drawers and that'll be the only object you can use. So they've really... There's no point for it, really.
Well, what they promised it would be like a virtual hub for where you'd go to before launching into your games,
yeah.
And you'd be able to take your friends from there into other ones. And that's just not happened.
So it's a shame. I think it could have been really good. But anyway, the reason for mentioning this is apparently Microsoft is going to be developing its own version, and it's pretty much along the same lines, 3D world, you mosey on about, women probably get surrounded by males like they do in home, really quite bizarre. But there's lots of other potential accessories to it, such as the ability to stream films and TV programs through all the apps that are already available on the Xbox, like, you know, Netflix, HBO, stuff like that. And there's also mention of something that's similar to the kind of partnership that people get on YouTube, where they actually get paid for it through, you know, gameplay videos and walkthroughs, etc. And so, you know, all these people who are, don't use the word celebrities, but the popular people on YouTube could have their own avatar on in this Xbox version, and they could be wandering around showing their own gameplays and stuff like that. So it seems really in depth, but as to how much of a success it would be compared to,
I'd hope they'd learn from Sony's failures with PlayStation Home. But then again, Sony aren't admitting that they've made a failure, because every once in a while they'll pipe up saying, yeah, but 70 billion people have used it. How many people return, I think, is closer to 7. But, yeah.
Has that first-person shooter come out on it yet? Because wasn't there going to be some free-to-play FPS on home?
Yep, it's a full wasteland of broken promises, that place. If there's one on Xbox, well, you presumably need an Xbox Gold membership anyway. But I won't play. I just do not see the point in it, and...
Yeah,
I imagine it'll be the exact same as PlayStation Home, if one indeed does come out, which wouldn't surprise me. There's been a lot of bandwagon jumping this generation, with people stealing each other's ideas non-stop, so I expect they will be in the making. Although it seems a bit strange that they wait till 3 years after.
Well, I think by the sounds of it, it sounds like something that will be on the next Xbox rather than this one.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Microsoft seems to be moving towards a more media center.
Yeah.
Kind of, instead of just a games console. I mean, you could see that with the latest Xbox dashboard redesign, which made it nearly impossible to actually play games.
What? You want to play games?
Yeah. So, yeah, feasible. Definitely feasible. Probably likely.
It's true. There we go. Right. EA may have announced a new skate game.
Wait, you have something about EA in here? There was a perfect link from our last EA story in the news.
To be fair, I've just copied and pasted most of these. This is the first time I'm reading them. There is also apparently going to be a skate for the Vita. Brand new game engine, so lots of nice new shiny new graphics, but loads of features apparently. A real-time day cycle, so it goes between day and night realistically. Map is like four times larger than Skate 3, like in Pokemon. Longboard and BMXs. BMX is mainly used to get to the mountains so that you can longboard down. Right, so okay. Hang on. So they're solving... Can't they just take the longboards and BMXs out instead of making one to get to another? Oh, you like this bit, Jordan. Flatland tricks. Finger flips, slides, and Casper. How cool does that sound? Gestures and facial expressions when grinding. Wow.
Yeah, these sound like menial updates, to say the least. I mean, the biggest thing there is the BMX longboard thing, which...
See, my problem with Skate is I've always been a huge fan of Tony Hawk's pro skater, and I assumed it would be a similar thing. And I got Skate 2, and I was devastated with how much of a skater you're expected to be.
No.
So someone would just say, oh, mate... See that shopping trolley over there? I bet you can't do a 720 front flip nose grind over it. And you think, what? And then you look in the instruction things to see all the trick button combinations. And then it's got exactly the same button combinations. There's about six other tricks. So I only got about 3% into Skate 2 before I gave up. So...
Yeah, well, like you, I was a big fan of Tony Hawk's, but I do like skates. As a non-skater myself, I'm probably in the rarity because, like you said, it does seem to think that you've been skating all your life and you know all the terms and how you would approach things. But I do like it again, though.
I just like deliberately falling off.
Yeah, the control scheme was... when it came out, it was really innovative, but a lot of other games have like taken it on. SSX has done a similar control scheme now, so it seems to be waning in popularity a lot. I mean, it didn't help that Skate 2 came out about a day after Skate 1 with literally no updates.
I think it was only trophies, wasn't it, that was different on Skate 2?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting though, because one of the like the most high profile games for oversaturation was Tony Hawk's. I mean, they released a game every 10 minutes. People got bored after Tony Hawk's 17. So you would have thought that EA would have looked at Skate and thought, alright, we're not going to do that with our brand. But hey, they're the worst company in America, so why would they do such a thing?
What can you expect? Right, recently we've had a lot of information about the Xbox Nigel. For those of you who haven't listened before, that is the official name of the next Xbox. But we haven't really said much about the PlayStation 4. We've expected that to be released a bit later than the Xbox, which is why we haven't really mentioned much about it. But sources close to VG247 claim that Sony's planning to release the PlayStation 4 before Christmas 2013. Which is when Microsoft is expected to launch its console. And the sources claim that Sony is confident of beating Microsoft to market this time. Not really sure how to... what to tell you with that one?
I don't believe it, to be honest.
So?
I think that there's a lot will change between now and 2013. Especially with the Wii U probably coming out at some time as well.
Yeah. Well, what did we say before? Did we think 2014, 2015, something like that?
I still think back end of 2014.
Yeah.
I mean, we're still seeing new things being knocked out on the PS3. People are actually finally learning to use the terrible architecture.
Yeah.
With all the like 6 SBUs that was ridiculously difficult to use. I mean, we saw a couple of weeks ago Quantic Dream's Kara demo. Which you weren't exactly pleased about, but...
Well, I was not impressed.
Yeah, but...
There's
a lot of power to still get out of it.
Exactly. And, I mean, this thing goes on to say, top-line publishers already know about the console specifications, with the source confirming that developers working with publishers, like Ubisoft, for example, already know what's going on. They're already working on it. Most other developers will be briefed by the end of this year. That's the thing that kind of makes the whole thing not seem that legit. Because if they're going to be letting people know about it by the end of this year, for launch titles that really sell a game, I imagine they'd be working on it for some time, not just
about a year. Well, you said that they already mentioned it to publishers like Ubisoft and other ones, so they might be doing the big games. I mean, launch titles, launch lineups are never really that good.
Spider-Man 3.
Yeah. Like with the Vita, that was the only one that had a genuinely impressive lineup recently. But with the hardware specs, did you actually have any one written down there that is believed?
Yes, right. Let's just go through these. Right, well, first off, the name. It's going to be apparently called the Orbis.
I thought that was the like the code name for it.
That's the code name. Latin, as was Vita, which, well, was Vita thought to be a code name as well?
No, that was. Oh, what was it called? No.
NGP.
Yeah, it was Next Generation.
Was
Portable.
It something else? Huh?
Yeah, it was the NGP. It was Next Generation Portable.
Yeah.
Because I always got confused with the Neo Geo Portable.
Yes.
The NGP.
That's it. So yeah, Orbis, Vita, put them next to each other, Orbis Vitae, that's Latin for the Circle of Life. Intriguing.
Let's break out some Elton John.
Yes, let's. right, AMD will be supplying the processor and graphics. We've mentioned this the last couple of weeks. But the graphics cards are apparently what AMD is going to be providing late 2012 for high-end PC gaming. And the PS4's GPU apparently will be capable of displaying games at a resolution of 4096 by 2160, which is far, far superior to current high definition. And it'll also mean it can play 3D games in 1080p, whereas the PS3 can only play them in 720p. So it sounds pretty powerful from that. But also no backwards compatibility, apparently, and no used games either. And go on.
Yeah, I was just going with the backwards compatibility thing. This is with the AMD CPUs that they're going to be using instead of like all the SPUs that they used before. Because coding onto the SPUs is a lot more powerful, but it's a lot more difficult.
Yeah.
I heard rumors that a while back that the Orbis would have 24 SPUs, whereas the PlayStation 3 only had 6. And nobody could code for them, since they just couldn't get the power out of it. So with the switch from onto AMD CPUs, I think that's the most interesting point.
Mm.
Also, you said with the used games, I don't know how they'd manage that. I think there would be a massive uproar, and people saying that they would boycott it, and then not boycott it, but they'll say it.
Because I watched a video on IGN that they did. They did a roundup of all these Orbis rumours.
Mm.
And the way they looked at it was quite interesting, in that potentially you could... One of the rumours they'd heard is that you'd install the game from the disc and then you wouldn't need the disc anymore. It's installed completely to the hardware.
Yeah.
And then if someone else was to take that disc that had been locked to your console and now to put it in their machine, maybe they could play only a kind of a trial version of a game before, and to access the full thing, then have to pay to unlock.
Yeah.
To unlock more.
It's an interesting concept, but then you got to think, what happens if your PS3 breaks?
Yeah.
You lose your entire game collection.
Exactly, and that's happened that's happened to both of us, isn't it? How many times?
Yeah, several times.
How many PS3s have you been through?
Well, I'm on my second one, but my first one broke about 50 times, and I kept on fixing it.
I'm on my fourth at the moment.
I just can't see them doing it, to be honest.
It's going to be interesting seeing these next consoles surface, isn't it?
Yeah. I am looking forward to it, not financially, of course, but
yeah.
Yeah, in the next few years, it's going to be interesting.
Very
to see
expensive.
It's going to be interesting to see how much the industry is going to change. I mean, we've seen already mini revolutions with things like Kickstarter changing how games might be funded. we're seeing with game almost going out of business, and the used game market is suffering a bit.
Yeah.
It's going to be an interesting couple of years, and by the time the Xbox Nigel and the PlayStation Orbis come out, we might be in a completely different climate to what we are now. So,
yeah, global warming.
Yes, that's what I meant. Not
we could all live in rainforests or the Antarctic if the day after tomorrow is to be believed.
Yeah.
Sod logic.
So, yeah. See, PlayStation Orbis for you.
Yep. And that's it from the rumour room. Do you know what else begins with R?
What does?
Retro.
And two R's as well, Rumour Room and Retro Roundup.
Is that smooth or what?
Yeah, since you've already brought that up, we might as well move on to the Retro Roundup. Last podcast, you were tasked with playing Rock and Roll Racing for...
Yep.
Did you go for the SNES version or the Mega Drive? I can't remember.
I went for Mega Drive.
And how did you find it?
I thought it was brilliant. Really good. The soundtrack is fantastic, isn't it? It's all...
Yes, it is.
Oh, I'm sure, I think, what was it?
Iron Man by Black Sabbath.
Yeah, there was some Black Sabbath.
Born to Be Wild by Steppenwolf. Did you get the one with Red Our Love by Golden Earring? Or was that on the SNES version?
How's it go?
You got the thing, and it's called Red Our Love. You got the...
I don't know, I might have done. I recognised a load of them, though. And, yeah, that's it. Yeah, had that. Yeah, great game. Yeah, enjoyed it, loved it. Took a little while to get used to. The whole, from the angle you're controlling everything.
Yeah, because it's on an isometric grid and you're like at a half top-down view and yeah.
But yeah, it's worth it just for the soundtrack. And the sound effects in general are pretty good. I mean, the commentating and writing over everything, that's
yeah,
that's nice.
The soundtrack, the songs that they've picked are some of the best driving music there are anyway. Mm. And then hearing the 8-bit versions, it's just like... Yeah. It's delightful.
Yeah. So, yeah. Good game. I liked it.
Yeah, so from the sounds of it, you're going for a thumbs up?
Thumbs up.
Sweet. This week, this podcast, you're going to be playing a different game, and it's going to be Cannon Fodder. Ever heard of it?
It sounds familiar.
It's a RCS action game from 1993. And it was released on the 3DO, the Acorn, the Amiga, the Jaguar, the PC, the Mega Drive, and the SNES.
So everything?
Pretty much. I think there was a Game Boy version later made as well. So yes, Cannon Fodder. I could not say which version's the worst or the best. What I do know is that in 1995, I believe, it got the best Jaguar game of the year award. But there was only three games out in Jaguar.
So he kind of got it by default.
Yes. But, yep, that's what you're going to be playing this week.
Nice.
Cannon Fodder.
Cool. Speaking of playing games, I've actually been playing games.
Oh, have you?
Yes.
Well, let's move on to that exciting revelation in Game of the Week. What have you been playing, James?
Right, well, I've been working very hard the last couple of weeks, and I've managed to get a lot of work done ahead of schedule, so I've had some free time to game it up. First off, I got back to L.A. Noire again, just so people know I'm still the worst detective ever. I've failed a couple of cases in which I've just been horrendously bad. I get questions wrong constantly. So, a game that I've played for the first time in the last week or so, it was Just Cause 2. Finally got onto playing it. I bought it last February. First time I played it. Great fun. Love it. It's brilliant. I like how you can get by without knowing the story. You can just make everything up as you go along.
Oh, there's a story.
Apparently so. If you watch the cutscenes, there's something. I wasn't paying attention. I was too busy thinking about what I was going to do. But you can pretend to be, like I do, pretend to be James Bond. And break into some base, and you're there, and we're like, bang, 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 blow everything up. Brilliant. Awesome game.
Yeah, it's just like that unbridled sense of creativity you get from being a sociopath, where you'll see an aeroplane and a guy walking past, and you'll think, do you know what? I'm going to shoot a grappling hook at this guy, yeah. And then attach him to that aeroplane. Let's see what happens.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
It's not the most highbrow game, but it's,
who cares?
It's delightfully fun. Yeah, you're combining it with L.A. Noire to make up for that.
Yep, and then a couple of other games.
Oh, bloody hell, you've been on a...
Oh, no, I haven't played anything for about 5 months. I've completed Angry Birds Space, did that yesterday. Quite clever, actually, all the kind of gravity aspect added to Angry Birds. You got little planets and you have to catch it in the gravity of various...
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
...space bodies to fling it about. And I think this is going to be my surprise of the week, Spyro Skylanders, and it's actually pretty decent. The soundtrack's fantastic. I looked up online and Hans Zimmer did it, the guy who did all film awesome things. But it's really good. But the thing that bothers me is just the whole toy aspect. For those of you who don't know, when you buy the game, you get this. It's called a portal. And it's this little plastic circular thing that connects to your console of choice via Bluetooth or Wi-Fi or something. And you get three game characters with it, and they're on these little plastic plinth things. And whatever is sitting on the portal is the character you're playing as at that moment in time. So Spyro's on there, you're playing as Spyro, and then you take him off. And it kind of zooms out to some kind of outer realm thing, just swirling around waiting for you to put another character on. And then it goes back in the game, and you're then playing as that character. And it's quite interesting, because they all remember their health each character has, so it's got some funny moments when I'm just sitting there playing and you've got Spyro on, then he's about to die, and he's like, no! And you dive across and knock the one toy off and put the other one on. But the toy thing, there's 18, I think, or 20-something, and you have to, about £7 each, you buy these toys, you put them on, you play as them. I think it would be much better if it was more like Lego games, in that all the characters are already on the disc, and you just pick a couple that you want to play as at the start of a level. So yeah, I think it'd be better if it was formatted more like the Lego games, but other than that, I'm really pleasantly surprised by it.
Well, the way I see it is almost like an extension on the philosophy that the Pokemon games had in a strange way. Like how the Pokemon games were just basically made and for you to go out and buy all the Pokemon merchandise.
Yeah.
So I could imagine if someone had repackaged this with Pokemon instead, I would not have been surprised. So what do you do? It's made towards kids, so they buy products and it's working.
Yeah.
Although I don't see why anyone would want to buy Ugly Spyro.
Overall, it's a fairly decent game. I think if it was more like the Lego games and all the characters were already on the disc, you wouldn't have to worry about the toy things. I'd probably rent it just because of my past experience with Spyro, and it seems a pretty decent game, so...
Yeah, but it's just putting an extra barrier to entry up to people. I mean, it's going to get expensive quickly, and...
But I'm pleasantly surprised. I think I remember absolutely slating the idea on one of these podcasts.
Yeah, when it was first announced, you got very angry and called out Ugly Spyro.
Yeah. Is it worth mentioning as well that we played Twisted Metal last week after the podcast?
You can if you'd like.
Because it was your game of the week, wasn't it, or one of them?
It was my game of the week, yes. I went on a bit about it, how it being a decent game, but there was too much disconnect between the fun gameplay and then the really really almost psychopathic cutscenes.
Yeah.
Which was extremely dark and stylized, which there was a bit of a disconnect, and how the storyline didn't really... It was too short and it didn't make any sense. But yes.
Because after we finished last podcast, we played it on co-op. And how far is it? We got a third of the way through the game, didn't we? In about 40 minutes.
Yeah, we got onto the second chapter of three. Yeah, in less than an hour. It's not a long game.
It was fun what I played. I think the only... If I saw it on the PlayStation Network for a tenner, maybe like £12, then I would download it and buy it.
Yeah,
I would have felt a bit ripped off if I'd have paid £40 for it.
It does seem like not an unfinished game, because it's got a lot of polish and everything, but it just...
More like a PlayStation Network game, rather
than... it doesn't feel like there's enough there. And I'm not usually one for complaining about games being too short. My game of the week this week was an extremely short one. But yeah, it just didn't feel like enough.
And how did they spend so much time on it? That's what I don't get.
I don't know. I just don't know. It's probably, I mean, it was in production for absolutely years, wasn't it?
It's up there with Gran Turismo and The Last Guardian.
Yes. Speaking of which, my game of the week this week was, well, I've got about five, actually. the Eco and Shadow of the Colossus collection.
Have you found that? Because I've read online a lot of people are complaining about the controls.
Well, I've only played Eco so far. I haven't gotten to Shadow of Colossus. The controls are the exact same as they were before.
Right.
I really enjoyed it because I got it when it came out, and I then replayed through it about 2 years ago on the PlayStation 2. This has brought up a real problem with achievements and trophies, I found, because one of the great things about the game is that it's very self-contained and everything's done for a reason. You feel all part of it. It's the immersion it gets, because there's no HUDs, there's no attack damage. It's just the game.
Right.
Whereas, and it gets a real sense of immersion. Whereas with achievements, when it comes up, it takes you away from the game. On the other side of that, though, the achievements did actually give an extra element in that I've played this game already twice and I've done everything there was to do, but now it's just giving it that extra something else that you can do. One of the achievements is for completing the game in 2 hours, which is ridiculously difficult, and that I wouldn't have done that otherwise, so it was just that extra incentive to play through the game in a different way, which, so I mean, that's the two sides of trophies and achievements, I suppose.
Yeah.
Like I said, I've not played Shadow of the Colossus yet. The other games I've been playing this week has been the Metal Gear Solid HD collection, which involves Metal Gear Solid 3, Peace Walker, and Metal Gear Solid 2. I've only played through Metal Gear Solid 3, which is as great a game as it was when it came out. One of the nice touches is that they put the games in chronological order in the games world. So I played through Metal Gear Solid 3 because it was the first game in the series. It's set in 1960, whereas the other ones are through later years. And it just adds a nice chronology to what is the most confusing game series there is. Apart from Prince of Persia, I think. Prince of Persia is really,
I've just given up with Prince of Persia.
But yeah, HD remakes. I'm still a... I think they're good if they give you a good excuse to go back and play old games, but I'm still not convinced with them.
Okay, so...
Yeah. Those were my games of the week.
Lots of... Yeah, you seem to have your own little retro roundup then, didn't you?
Yeah. I've played all these games before, though, so I don't get the joy of turning on a game and hearing some 8-bit rock and roll for the first time.
Sweet.
So, let's move on to the final part of the podcast and taking a look at what's been going on over at thereticule.com. Nick has been previewing Resonance, which is an upcoming game. Chris has been looking at the trailer for the difficult to say Botanicular, I'm going with. Apologies to anyone listening who knows how to pronounce that correctly, but I can't.
Text in on... Have we got a text number that people can text?
You can hand out your mobile number if you want, but I'm not going to.
Yeah, I'm not going. Just tweet the reticule if you know how to pronounce it. Although it's not going to actually achieve anything else. They'll just write it, won't they? And we'll still not know.
You can write it phonetically.
Yes.
And finally, Kevin has been looking at the upcoming game Tokitori 2 and is also been rounding up one of the best free to play games, EverQuest 2. So go check those out over the reticule. I've been Jordez, with me has been Nick Nameless James. This has been the Reticule Presents Installing to Disc. Any last words, James?
Prompt.
Prompt?
Yes.
I will go with goodbye as per usual. Goodbye.